What's up, everyone? You are tuned in to another episode of The Broke Come Up. I'm Marquise.
And this is Marcus. What's up?
Yeah, and we want to thank you guys for joining us for what is going to be, I think, a very, very interesting episode, because we're talking about the culture and how we need to support the culture, right?
There we go. There we go.
So before we get started, I want to know, how was your week, first off? How was your week? How did your weekend go?
Hey, man, the weekend was great. It was very relaxing, you know. Mm-hmm. Again, I was able to spend it with that special someone.
And, right. Ooh, we spending a lot of weekends. Wow.
But other than that, you know, things have gotten busy. You know what I'm saying? You know, school is back in. You know, I got projects going on. You right. know what I'm saying? So there's just a lot going on, you know.
That's what's up. Just kind of getting summer going in full swing, huh?
Absolutely. Absolutely. What about yourself?
It was pretty relaxing, actually, this weekend. I had a lot of fun just kind of chilling. I took myself out, which is what we're going to talk about today. I ended up taking myself out on a date.
Right.
And you'll see why it was a date, because I think, well, I think personally,
right.
I think it's important to date yourself anyway. Because
it is. It is.
You know, definitely. You learn a lot about yourself, but I was truly, truly, truly on a date. But it was real chill. I enjoyed it, man. I enjoyed it. I just enjoyed sitting around.
Yeah.
I'm watching YouTube, just relaxing. And I actually, you know, I do my design stuff. And
gotcha.
I thought of this really nice, like, fight the power type statement.
Yeah. Yeah.
Design, and, you know, decided to, I was doing it for someone, and I was like, man, this is really good. Mm-hmm. I should do it for myself. And then I just kind of got inspired. And, you know, I thought that was really good to kind of keep myself busy. So, I mean, I felt like it was a real productive weekend for me.
Yeah,
very weekend for me.
Yeah, very, very relevant times right now. It's a lot going on. You know, I can just say, you know, as for myself, I'm just kind of in awe, you know, with how this thing has spread, you know, in a nationwide sense and definitely in a worldwide sense, you know, with what's going on.
Oh, yeah, man. It's amazing how many people like protesting and doing thing and stuff.
Yeah.
I think it is that it's finally bringing light to issues that we've been talking about for like hundreds of years. you know, but I see what you're drinking on right now. That's our next part. What are you drinking on?
Well, I told
your red blend.
Hey, not the red blend today. It's still the Apothic. I went back to the Inferno. Like I told you, I'm kind of a creature of habit when it comes to my wine. You know, you kind of know what you like. I'm still kind of just hitting the Inferno that has kind of like it's been, I guess, distilled, or it's been in the whiskey barrels or whatever. You know what I'm saying? So it has kind of that smoky taste, and that's just what I like. So I just, you know, that's what I got tonight. What about you?
Well, you know, I can change it up in a drop of a dime. You know? I'm like a female changes her hair. You never know what you're gonna get with me. So tonight, it's a little different. I love my tequila, but I've been on my whiskey lately too. So I decided, let me see if I could blend the two, because you know, a lot of people don't feel that tequila and whiskey can go together. But you know what? I am an innovator.
Okay.
And I feel that you can make anything go together. So I was very creative tonight, and I decided to make some simple syrup. And those that don't know how to make simple syrup, equal parts water, equal parts sugar. So I did some simple syrup in a pan, and I decided to put like an ounce and a half. So that's like a shot. So I put like a shot. It was chilled of whiskey.
Right.
And then like like a shot and a half. So then I put like a shot of tequila in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I put some of the simple syrup in it. I put like maybe like 3 or 4 tablespoons of simple syrup in it.
Okay.
Then I put some dashes of lime juice in it. You know, I'm on like number 4, number 5 now. So you know what? I'm ready today. And I call this drink the Get Right.
Sound like you're in the wrong occupation to me. What you talking about right now?
So, you know, back in the day, I did used to do a lot of bartending. And okay. Like, I felt like I could have been a mixologist, but I mean.
Gotcha.
Never found the right opportunity to do it. But, you know, I like doing stuff like that. Like mixing drinks and stuff is real fun for me. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm sipping on right now. It's just a little tequila whiskey with some lime juice, simple syrup. And I even tried one of the drinks. I had the Bai, that juice.
Okay.
That healthy juice.
Yeah.
It was a strawberry juice, and I put a little bit of that to kind of give it a little strawberry taste.
Wow.
That was one of the drinks. But right now, I'm just on my regular.
That sounds good.
I try.
Yeah.
I try.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's really good. Like, I feel like, you know, this is something that people will continuously buy.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Okay.
So, all right. So, let's move on to our Get It and Quit It segment. And I want to talk about this story. I did not tell you the story purposely because I want to get your feedback on it.
Oh, gosh.
All right. So, you know, I'm kind of on pop culture sometimes and mm-hmm. these Instagram celebrities or, you know, social media celebrities. So there's this celebrity or social influencer. Mm-hmm. Her name is B. Simone.
Okay.
She does this whole baby boy, like that type of thing. Like, that's how she always talks. It's real extra.
Okay.
But, and I think she's right here in Atlanta as well. But, so she was doing a podcast or an interview with Nick Cannon.
Okay.
And they asked her, she's single, and they asked her, what type of guy do you look for? And she said, and she clarified her statements, but here's what she said. She said that she does not want a person with a 9-to-5. She wants a CEO that's just like her because they understand where she's coming from.
Ooh.
And so they was like, oh, so you don't want somebody that clocks in and that clocks out. She said, no, I would never want someone that clocks in and clocks out.
Wow.
So, let me ask you your thoughts on that. What are your thoughts on that?
Wow. Well, for one, you kind of take a drink. Yeah, right. You kind of caught me off guard about that. Well, I mean, if that's what she wants, that's what she wants. I guess she figures, you know, someone who's a CEO at the time has done enough work to be up there. I mean, who knows how they got up there? Maybe they could have a silver spoon in their mouth or whatever, you know, or have some hookups or, you know, what. I mean, if that's what she wants, that's what she wants. You know what I'm saying?
I'm just going to tell you. Okay, so here's my thoughts on this. Okay. She sounds dumb and ignorant as hell. Because, I mean, to make that general statement of you only want a CEO because that is what they understand your hustle and your grind. That is the most ignorant statement I've ever heard in my life.
I got you.
You mean to tell me that someone, and first of all, I'm just going to put myself in this situation. I am technically a CEO because I'm the CEO of my own business.
Sure.
Would I qualify? Doubt it because I clearly am not in the same tax bracket.
Right. But that's what we're talking about here.
I hit her mark of being a CEO.
Correct.
So, I mean, that's the dumbest thing. And then the thing is to say, do you realize that a 9-to-5, like they're doctors, they're surgeons, they're lawyers.
Sure.
They're all types of people who work or clock in on a regular job. They don't own the hospital or the law office or whatever.
Sure.
But they clock in and they make just as much and probably have just as many hours that they have to spend doing it. And for her to be so short-sighted and narrow-minded in her vision was like beyond me. And it was very immature. Yeah. And it showed to me that, you know, this is like how a lot of young people think. They think, oh, boss.
Right,
boss.
Right. And there's different ways that a boss looks, obviously, in terms of, you know, how you
like,
do your thing.
That was the dumbest.
Yeah. The only thing that I could come away with that is maybe she wanted someone who creates their own schedule. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, okay, because I'm a CEO, I plan this out. You know, I get this money a particular way. And, you know, this is how it's going to go. So it's not like you are restricted to what someone else is giving you in terms of when you're supposed to work. It's almost like she's saying, well, I want someone who works when he wants to. And
it sounds to me like she wants a drug dealer. That's what that sounds like. Like like that sounds like a drug dealer. It sounds legit like a drug dealer. Like, oh, I want somebody that wants your own schedule, wants you to do what you want to do. And so she tried to clarify it.
Right.
Because, you know, people were dragging her because like a few years ago, she was living out of her car with only like $24 in her bank account. So how in the world could you fix your mouth to say you only want someone who is a CEO or a boss like you? You were literally a bum.
Wow.
Like the exact definition of a bum.
Yeah. And you would think that you would want someone 9-to-5 who understands that, who maybe has graduated up to a CEO.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Like, for you to be so short-sighted to say that, how do you know someone with a 9-to-5 wouldn't understand your hustle?
What
would understand if you're up to 3 o'clock in the morning buying AliExpress makeup kits?
Well, I think there's a level of exclusivity that she's trying to put out there. You know what I'm saying? So she's trying to cut off a lot of cats to be like, okay. And we're talking about tax breaks. Let's just be all the way 100 about that. Like if a doctor approached her and was making $500K a year, it wouldn't be an issue, I don't think. You know what I'm saying? But I think what we're talking about here is a level of exclusivity to say, okay, I'm in a particular range of money making or status or whatever, and I only want to be available to that particular demographic, if you will. You know what I'm saying?
And to an extent, I can almost agree with that. Until you make the statement of you only want someone that understands your lifestyle, that
this is true.
The same lifestyle. To me, that sounds like a drug dealer.
I got you.
Because what kind of CEO would understand your lifestyle, or what kind of 9-to-5 person would understand that? Hey,
this is true.
You up or you traveling? You got to do this stuff. If I'm with you, I'm with you.
Correct. So,
like, but that's that immature, like
it is
that childish mentality that a lot of these kids on social media have. They see, oh, I got a couple of hundred thousand followers, a couple of million followers. The money's coming in quickly, so I want the same thing, and not realizing that's not long money, that's short money.
Absolutely. And I think that's the discrepancy here. Comes the thing about, well, you don't want someone who has worked through and developed and then been along for the ride through the process to understand this stuff. You know what I'm saying? You want someone on the end who is showing the dollars, who's showing the fame, who's showing the notoriety or whatever. And I think that as you grow older, you come to appreciate that process for what it is. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I'm interested to see, you know, if she finds somebody, because with an attitude like that, I couldn't see how anyone, CEO or not, would be willing to even deal with her.
Right.
With, like, just from just her disposition, first off. Yes. Not even that. That's the thing. Like, people keep thinking, like, oh, because I want this type of person. But it's more than just what you do professionally. Mm-hmm. People are looking at everything. And if you act like a hood rat, then odds are you are a hood rat. Yeah. And I'm not calling her a hood rat.
Right.
I'm just saying the way that, like, I gave that little, my rendition of how she speaks and how she talks.
Yes.
You know, every baby boy, I'm going to do this. And come on. Like, who speaks like that? But you want a CEO. You want a CEO, and you're talking like that.
Well, I'm
interested to see who she gets.
I hear what you're saying. But I just think that with that kind of talk, that vernacular, it's a trendy thing. And people are responding. Someone's responding to that. And they think it's sexy.
A CEO. I guarantee it. If it is a CEO, it's a CEO that's not a real CEO.
I got it.
It's
like
a CEO that's getting some quick money. That's what it is. Right. They're responding to it because that's all they're seeing. And as soon as this whole Instagram social media thing is done, that's it too.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But that was our hit it and quit it segment. But that actually runs into, because we're talking about CEOs, that runs into our topics for today.
Absolutely.
And our topic is for today is called I'm Black and I'm Proud. And that's all in telling supporting the Black business.
Okay.
Supporting your Black CEOs, supporting your Black entrepreneurs.
Yes.
And these businesses, because, you know, that's the big thing now.
Right.
How do we support our people? How do we make sure that we keep the dollar Black?
Correct.
Because if you look at research, I think in the Jewish community, like they take, like, I don't think any money leaves out of their community.
Right,
really.
Right.
Whereas, you know, in our community, a lot of money leaves out because we're spending it everywhere.
Correct.
So what do you think? Like, what do you think? How does it look to support a black business to you?
Ooh, well, you know, that's a really that's a really complicated question, because there's a lot of intricacies in with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we're talking about someone who's, you know, owning a restaurant or a nightclub, you know, those types of things we like to go to, or, you know, if you're talking about retail or that kind of thing. We could talk about it in terms of a loyalty towards going to that business, you know, in comparison to other things. Like, maybe that business is 30 miles away from us, and then there's another business that may not be black owned or whatever that is 10 miles away from us. And we make that decision to say, okay, well, right, I'm going to go that extra length to see to it that that money stays circulating in the black community. You know what I'm saying? So,
right.
I think you have that kind of dynamic that goes on. And then in that, you know, we have to make decisions along the way. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. you know, what's the quality of it? You know what I'm saying? Am I getting, you know, what I'm paying for? You know, the service and all those kinds of things. And we look at all of that kind of stuff. It's not just about the product, you know, whether right. it's a shirt or a tie or whatever. We look at that service, you know what I'm saying? We want to come and feel welcome. We want to come and feel like we y'all respect us and know us, and we're a part of your family. And that causes us as consumers to remain loyal to you and maybe pay for more of something that we wouldn't have paid for going somewhere else, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And I got a story. I want to tell that story a little bit later, but I about being a patron to a black business.
Okay.
Because, you know, that's been the big push.
Right.
Is finding our black businesses in our communities and making sure that we support them.
Right.
But, you know, how does that look even from the aspect, you know, we're essentially black owners.
Yeah.
We're black business owners. So how does that look? Like, how do we, because I think the big misconception is when people see it's black owned, they instantly think, because black, you my brother, you my sister, I should get a discount.
Correct.
And I think that's where a lot of people get frustrated, because it's like, no, you don't get a discount because
right.
it's black owned. And I made the comparison, the example to my friends and my sisters. Mm-hmm. I said, would you go to Neiman Marcus and say, can I get this t-shirt for $20?
Right.
And it's really $600? Like, no, you would not. You would not ask them, could you get a deal? Could you get a discount?
Right.
You would literally pay whatever they say.
Right.
Or if you had a coupon, then sure.
Right.
But you would not actually say, oh, because I know you, I'm going to promote it. And that's one thing, too, as consumers. As, you know, as African-American consumers, we have to get into the mindset of not saying, let me get something for free. Yeah. Let me get this and I'll promote your business. Or, oh, if you give me this, I'll put it on my social media, or I'll tell my followers to do it. But you can also pay for it and do the same thing.
Well, I think there's a discourse going on. There are a lot of discourses going on here in terms of the value of things, the quality of things, in terms of who is the retail person. If it's a white person, you know what I'm saying? You know, Ralph Lauren or Tommy Hilfiger or, you know, wherever, we say, okay, that is unquestionable. You know, the quality, the value is already there, and we spend for it. We don't question that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But when it comes to something else, you know, maybe a black owned business who's trying to, you know, get their stuff online, we say, okay, well, why do I need to pay for this? You know, if you're not established in that kind of thing. Now, I will give a disclaimer to this, because I will say, when FUBU came out, you understand what mm-hmm. I'm saying? We was buying it like hotcakes. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And we didn't question nothing. And I think it probably more so had...
But wait.
Oh, go ahead.
And I actually followed him. So we didn't question it, but we got to look at his hustle first.
Yeah,
That man was selling stuff out of his trunk. Okay. He was selling out of his trunk first, so he had to build up his brand right. for it. But then you also got to think, too, you had your bootleggers that was buying, what is it? It was like Poo Boo.
Right. So,
but he hustled.
So, and I get that. So my question becomes then, why is it that we then feel like we have to follow our own and say, okay, there's quality, but we won't do the same for someone who's non-black? You understand what I'm saying? You're not going to go to Tommy Hilfiger. Right. As a matter of fact, Tommy Hilfiger had some things to say in the past that were kind of semi-racist.
All the time.
You understand what I'm saying?
I still don't wear Tommy Hilfiger.
I hear what you're saying. But, I mean, at one time, I mean, everyone had it. You know, and especially black folks had it. We was out here stepping it out with it. We was out here ironing it up, creasing it out, and whatever. You know what I'm saying? So again, it still becomes a thing of where when it's our own, we feel like we have to go through 10 and 12 steps to make sure that the validity is, you know, this person or that, you know, group to say, okay, it's okay for them to sell stuff as quality or whatever. But when it's non-black, it's an assumption that it's already quality. You know what I'm
it's
saying?
It's already quality, yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is very true. Yeah. And I think as the black community, we have to get out of that mindset.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, and as to like the black person has to prove themselves as a business.
Sure, right.
You know, you got to prove yourself to us, but then, you know, Louis Vuitton come out and it's like, you see somebody, some famous person just happen to wear it and all of us, or a rapper sings about it and then all of a sudden, boom, you know, you don't mind spending $250.
You know what? And
on a clutch.
You know what's so funny about that? You know, I can remember me being young and my mom, she loved Louis Vuitton back in the day. And I can remember the person that she had, not necessarily the scarves and the shoes and all that kind of stuff. She had the luggage and that kind of thing. But it really wasn't a big thing. You know what I'm saying? And she always had this stuff. And all of a sudden, you know, I look and maybe like 20 years later, it becomes like, oh, everyone's wearing it. And I'm looking like, my mom used to just rock that back in the day and it was all good. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, well, see, no, wait. Now that was because of your mom. Look, that was your mom. My mom, on the other hand, could not afford that.
I got you.
My mom could not afford that. So it wasn't until I became grown.
Oh, God.
And I was able to find somebody that had that stuff in their trunk. And I was like, let me get this Louis Vuitton.
Got you.
And hope it's real, you know. Or honestly, and like even going to like the real stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
It wasn't until I became like a legit adult and got my own money where it was like, oh, because I could not afford that, now let me buy it because it was exclusive.
Yeah.
But you know, for FUBU, that wasn't exclusive.
Yeah, right.
You know what I'm saying? Right. Like that wasn't like, but that was, but you were known to have like FUBU.
Well,
like you had to know to just buy it. But like it, you know, and he had to work. Like he had to work his butt off.
And
10 times harder than I'm pretty sure Ralph Lauren had.
I mean, he did. And I think that what also was the appeal for FUBU was the fact that the styles of it catered to us. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The style of the wear, the jerseys and the different thing, the different apparel that came out of FUBU, it was something that we was like, yeah, that's fly. You know what I'm saying? Which I think that he had to have a certain attention to detail. He had to be in the community to be like, yeah, this is what my folks want, and this is what I'm going to produce and then get this money off of. And I think he did a hell of a job in doing that. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, I just think, you know, that was the thing of where he had to cater to and had to do some real research and exploration and investigation on the things of, well, what do my folks want? You know what I'm saying? What's fashionable?
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And you know, we want to support. And I think that's where, as a business owner, you have to kind of figure out what do your people want. But then as a consumer, are you willing to bet on your people? I think, and that's the thing. You know, I feel that as a people, we're not willing to bet on us. You know, we'll invest in other people, but we won't bet on us as to like, because, you know, it's always like, oh, you're trying to get over on us. Or you might be like trying to scam us or do this thing to us. But it would never be said that the white business is trying to do that to us, you know?
Yeah, we just look at it and say, okay, it's quality. You know what I'm saying? This is stuff that it is what it is. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
And so, I like the story I was talking about. So this is not in the clothing industry, but this is more in the restaurant lounge industry. So that part of, so this past weekend, the end of the weekend, Sunday, I've been seeing like on Instagram, this business, this person has businesses around the city, And I decided, let me, you know, try out one of them. So I went downtown Atlanta, well, kind of downtown, one of the areas, and decided to try it. So it was around like maybe 8:30, 9 o'clock, 9 o'clock, close to 9 o'clock. And I said, let me just go in here, try it. It's a nice little small quaint place. Not really big. It was still not a lot of people. So it was still good for like social distancing, I guess, because it was still a pretty low-key chill vibe. I go in there, I get my, I've been on my whiskey. So I was like, let me get a whiskey and a Sprite. Got a whiskey and a Sprite. I was like, let me get a hookah. Got my hookah. You know, I'm sitting there watching. Like, they had the Super Bowl playing. Nice little, it was real chill. And I'm like, okay, this is, what, you know, I'm going with the theme of what everyone is saying on social media. Here are the black businesses. Here's what you support. Let's keep the dollar black. Cool. I'm having a good time just chilling, relaxing. So I was like, let me get another drink. So I get another whiskey, and I keep track now. All I had was a whiskey and two drinks. So then I'm like, let me get a to-go. I said, let me get a to-go order of wings and wings. I just said wings. So that's all I thought. I said lemon pepper, because you know black people love lemon pepper wings. So I said, y'all got lemon pepper wings? She said, yes. I said, okay, cool. Let me get an order of lemon pepper wings. All right, cool. And a water. I had a water.
You gotta get that water.
Because, you know, I've had some drinks. Right. I said, let me just dilute a little bit of it and whatever. I got my water, and I noticed my hookah wasn't really pulling as good as it was pulling, because I had been there like maybe an hour or so by now. So I told her, I was like, hey, is it possible if I, you know, I say it looks like the coal is down. So then she hits me with the, oh, it's going to be $10 for some coal. And I was like, oh, I'm good. So that's red flag number one to me.
Right.
Because in my mind, I'm thinking any other business that I go to, I don't ever have to pay for coal.
The refill, the refill, but not the coal.
Right. Exactly. Right. I'm like, all right, it's cool. You know, I done had a good hookah. You know, your hookah gave you a little buzz. I done had two drinks. Right. I'm good. You know, this was a good experience. But here comes the waitress or the bartender. She decides, hey, I'm going to go ahead and bring you some more coals. Just share your hookah with me. That ain't no problem, because you were cool anyway. She was actually pretty cool. She gave me a nice conversation. It wasn't many of us at the bar, so it was a pretty chill vibe. I don't mind sharing the hookah with you. Anybody that knows, if you go to a black bar, the waitresses and cocktail servers love hookahs. Like, you can pretty much like sell them the world if you get hookah. So another chick came, another server came, and so she wanted to take some of the hookah too. That's fine. I don't mind sharing the hookah, because, you know, it's a pretty chill, relaxing environment. We all, you know, having a good time. My wings come. I opened it up, and I was like, oh, they get fries with it too? Okay, cool. So it's a combo. I was like, it's a combo? I didn't realize it was a combo. All I wanted was like wings, because I did not see it on the menu. I looked like front and back on that menu, and so that's why I had to ask. Do you guys have wings? So I didn't see it. So I was like, all right. So about another 30 minutes or whatever, I'm just sitting there just chilling, drinking my water, because I wasn't going to drink anymore. So I'm like, let me just drink my water, smoke a few, a little bit of more hookah, whatever. I said, can I get my check? And she was like, okay. So she gives me my check. So I hope y'all have been keeping up with like what I said. I had a hookah, two drinks, and some wings, and it ended up being wings and fries. When I got my bill was $71.86.
Oh,
I said, God, are you kidding me? Like, what in the world? Oh my God.
Oh, man.
I could not believe I had almost a $72 bill. And so I looked and I noticed they put a 15% gratuity into it, and that like pissed me off. Like, don't tell me how much I have to like give you.
Right.
You know, and so that's one of the things. Right. And like, you know, we were talking earlier, you were saying, you know, there's other places that do that, which is fine. But the thing is, give me the option to know what I'm getting into. Because at that point, how do you know I done had such a good time with her? How do you know I didn't want to give her a $10?
Yes.
You've made me give her an $8 and like, I think it was like $8.46 or something like that. You made me give her that tip. And now because of me wanting to, you know, support the cause. I wanted to support the cause. I gave her an additional tip. Will I do it again? Hell no. But you know, that was my whole point. My whole point of that story was you can't, like, also on the flip side, we talked about not giving a discount, but you can't hit us over the head with these old, like, abnormal prices that just are, like, through the roof, and then throw it under the guise of, oh, because we're downtown Atlanta, you should expect to pay this price. I can go to the local hookah spot around by Georgia State and pay $15 for a hookah. And that's not going to happen. And that's on my
I think it's a slippery slope here, you know, because, you know, you have some businesses that have been established and have their clientele, and they know that they're going to pay, you know, because of the level of service that is consistent across the board, they can go ahead and put that gratuity in and it's okay. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, okay, this is our standard of service and this is what you come to expect and this is this and whatever. But I also think that, you know, sometimes that gratuity is put in out of a fear of certain demographic in the building, and I don't know if they're going to pay.
Yeah, okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if you have those nights where you got those Taco Tuesdays, those $2 Tuesdays or whatever, or the drinks are you know what I'm saying?
That. This was a Sunday.
Hey, I mean, whatever.
This was a whole Sunday night.
But I'm just saying it's a gimmick.
There are no specials going on Sunday night.
I hear what you're saying, but you still have, for Sundays, usually you have the day party going on. So there's drinks, you know, and specials going on. Not to say that it was going on where you were at. You know what I'm...
Right. It was like 9 o'clock at night. It was like almost 11. This was evening. Mm. So, I mean, I get what you're saying. Yeah. I totally understand it. I get it. Because you got people that, you know, they feel that, hey, I paid for this drink, I'm not giving you no tip. Like, that's your job. Like, that, you do. People like that.
You do.
On the other hand, you know, I know that you work for your stuff.
Yes, and what I'll say, you know, to piggyback on top of that, I've also been a waiter, you know, at a few different restaurants, and I know how hard that work is. When you have to put up with people-ish all night, you know what I'm saying? You know, they want 5 Diet Cokes, and they want to pay you 20 cents on the tip for that. You know what I'm saying? I understand that
part. Right.
So I understand that there's work being done in that, and you want to get what you need to get, you know, in terms of what you work for. And even you want to kind of make up for stuff that you didn't get from other customers. You know what I'm saying? So that happens too. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I get, and that's what I, and that's why, like, I don't mind tipping. But don't tell me what I got to tip.
I get you.
Like, don't force that on me. And I'm not just saying all black businesses do it. But I'm just saying, like, as a black business, we already got, like, we already behind the eight ball. So then why do you throw this extra curveball at someone to say, hey, by the way, I want you to pay $20 on this extra, like, thing that you're going to pay, all because you know they're going to pay it around the corner at this place. But you're not that place yet. You're, like, you're still, like, not that you're up and coming, but also, like, you're still just a regular business. You're not, like, an extra business. Like, you're not, like, an established business where you can just be like, oh, here is this service, and I'm going to charge you this
And I think when you say in the establishment of a business, you're talking about a level of trust in your customers. You know what I'm saying? So you know, that they're going to come in, you know, they're going to spend, they're going to tip, that kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, with that being said, you know, it's not a thing anymore to say, okay, that I need to mandate the gratuity that I put on your tip. You know what I mean? Because I know that, you know, this is the standard, you know, of service and product that you get at this establishment. And y'all just tip like this because this is the clientele that y'all are. And this is the service that you've got, and this is what you pay for it. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean?
That's true. And you know what? That really put a light bulb over to my head on probably why. But that goes back to the point of, as the customer, we have to appreciate the business. Because, I mean, it could very well be that business has said, black people don't pay. Yes. They're not going to pay their bill. Yes. You know, so just kind of going on that stereotype of you're not going to support, you're not going to pay, you're going to try and go on the cheap route. So let me go ahead and get this on the front end so you won't have to jip me on the back end. So I can kind of see that. But
I hear what you're saying. But you may be, but the point about it is, you may be 1 out of 20. You understand what I'm saying? When they go back and look at their taps and look at their tips, you may be the glaring anomaly out of all the other tips that gave the $2 and $3. Right. You see what I'm saying?
And let me tell you, I was even like, because I was just chilling that Sunday night, right? So I was even planning on going to like another place because that person, owns a couple of spots. Atlanta. So I was even going to go to the other spot because it's like an after-hour spot. I'm going to go there. I'm going to drive there, you know, see how it was. After seeing that $72 bill, well, it was more than that because I left more of a tip. Yeah, that was over $80. Right. After seeing that, I got depressed.
No, that's right. That means it's time to go home.
I got depressed. And I was like, it is time to go home. Let me set my alarm clock so I can get up for work and to do my stretches and my exercise. Because I'm back to broke. Like, I was like, my goodness. Like, that took me out. So, I mean, looking at these businesses and figuring out what we need to do to make sure that we get a happy medium.
I mean, I think that's a mouthful. You know what I'm saying? And I think, again, it comes down to the establishment and it comes down to the level of trust that they have in the clientele and customers that they have coming in there. You know what I'm saying? And I think once that's built up, then it becomes a thing of where you don't have to mandate the gratuity anymore, because you know across the board, when you look at those tips at the end of the night, when you turn your as a waiter or waitress, you know you got to turn those tips in, those credit card tips, and be like, okay, here's what comes in. And when they see that, and that average is, you know, 15% or 20% and above, then they can feel comfortable with not having to put that gratuity on there. You feel what I'm saying? But when,
that's my hope. But then, you know, what I don't hope that happens is, you have some people who, you know, you got to realize too. Capitalists. You know, we can take race out of the situation and put money into it here. And so when you see money and you realize this particular business is pulling in $30,000 in a night.
Yeah, right.
You know, after you done paid everything, you still got a good $30,000. You know, so do I stop? And that's what I'm saying as a business. Mm. Because the thing is, you know, what one thing about our Black businesses, some of us know how to cater to our Black people. We know how to make everybody feel like they're wanted, make everybody feel like they have a good time.
Right.
And everything. And so you're gonna buy bottles, you're gonna spend. And so do I stop that? You know, just because, you know, a few people want to, you know, save a few bucks, or do I let the person, you know, because you'll have some people on the flip side of this that come in from out of town, because, you know, Atlanta has a lot of people that come in from out of town. It's nothing for them to buy a $100 bottle of Patron. That's the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life, by the way. But it's nothing for them to buy that and have somebody come with sparklers. Like, I don't know if you saw that, like, the other night when we were out, what was that, Friday? You saw the table that was next to me. They bought that bottle of Patron.
Right.
Like, that's dumb as hell for me. But as a business owner, do I stop? Do I lower my prices to be, like, reasonable for everybody? Or do I say, you know what, here's what it is, and you're going to have some people that's going to pay it, and...
I think they understand that. I think these businesses understand that. They understand that, okay, everybody's not going to pay this. There are some, and on the average of, I don't know, 3, 4, 5, or 6 a night, depending upon what your establishment is, that will pay that. And that's what they bank on. You know what I'm saying? So I think at the end of the day that the businesses, they have to have an identity and be who they are. You know what I'm saying? They have a certain level of loyalty. Right. They have a certain level of making sure, you know, customer appreciation and that kind of thing, and making sure their customer is safe and feeling good and comfortable and all that kind of stuff. Every business doesn't have that kind of decorum with everybody. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean?
That's true.
So I think that you have the businesses that have established that identity. They're going to be who they are. You know what I'm saying? And then you have the some that are still trying to establish that, you know, maybe they're like this one day, maybe they're like this another day. You know what I'm saying? Trying to figure out, well, who do they need to be in order to maximize their profits and be who they want to be, you know, as much as they can be. You know what I'm saying? And I think that in this hodgepodge of nightclubs and retail and black businesses, you have that dynamic going on. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, you know, it's just, that's just kind of what it is.
I hope it. I really want, because I want us all to succeed as a people, because, you know, it's very disheartening when you see other cultures and other communities where they have stores in their neighborhoods and, like, you know, everybody's supporting their stores. Sure. The black people are supporting stores. And the money is still going back into the community. Even if it's going to that family, that family is a part of that community, which it can in turn support somebody else. And I really hope that we can get to that point. As a community where, and I think we're making steps. I really feel that we're making steps. Yeah. It might be slow steps and we might be long gone by the time it actually like happens, but I feel like we're making steps to do it. I just feel like we got to keep working harder in order to support our brothers and our sisters in entrepreneurship, so that, you know, we still live what the quote unquote.
Well, see, American and I think dream. That's a reciprocal thing. You know, as we customers and clients of these establishments, we come in, we want a particular experience when we come in. We want to be able to come in after work or with you know, our loved ones or significant others or our friends or whatever, and we want an experience. You know what I'm saying? And that experience on Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday nights, it fuels us into the week to say, okay, I had a good time last night. Now I'm ready to work. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean?
Exactly. And that, and that's not, this is the last one I want to make. You could have something else to say, but that's one of the things too, as a black business, our customer service has to kind of improve, because, you know, we can, and I've been kind of guilty of it too, where we demand respect as a business. You know, we demand that respect. Sure. And we want to be treated like a business. But then we'll code switch and go with that person like they're our homeboy or our homegirl. Like, we can't be their homeboy or their homegirl in one sentence and then be the business person in the next. And so the customer service has to be there for for our businesses, you know. If I'm going to a business, I shouldn't feel like I'm dealing with Pookie down the street. I should feel like I'm dealing with Pookie the businessman. You know, and sometimes, you know, we get a lot of that in our community. You know, that's why I can't support the black business, because, you know, you're not acting professional and those things. Because we'll feel that, or from a business standpoint, you understand how I'm talking to you. You understand my demeanor, my disposition, and you should accept it. Well, that's not necessarily professional to do. And so I think as a business, we have to, or as business people, we have to kind of get that under control too.
I agree.
So, all right, well, good. You know, I think that that's a good place to draw our closing point for today, you know, making sure we support our brothers and our sisters in this fight for equality and for financial freedom.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I definitely hope you guys enjoyed the show today and that you got something from it, that you were able to have some good discussion. If you want to have some discussion with us, please hit us up on Instagram at The Broke Come Up or on email by at thebrokecomeup.com at gmail.com, and we'll definitely you know, continue the conversation with you guys. So again, this is Marquise.
This is Marcus. There you go.
Love the drink. All right, so I'm saying follow your dreams. Dance like no one is watching and hustle till you can't hustle no more.
Peace out.
Peace.